Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Chronic Fatigue and Burnout Recovery Podcast. You may or may not have seen over the past few weeks, I've been releasing some episodes talking about specific things to focus on depending on where you are in your recovery. So talking about what to focus on if you're bedbound, or what to focus on if you're housebound, what to focus on when you're going back to work. And even since recording these episodes, I've been reflecting on the fact that these stages are usually not clean cut, and there's probably a lot of overlap between stages. There's probably a lot of moving backwards and forwards between stages, even though maybe the person who is bedbound might not be listening to this episode, because I'm going to be talking about what to do if you're high functioning. I did just want to say somewhere that there's a lot of gray areas as well when it comes to managing chronic fatigue and what to focus on. And although it can be helpful sometimes to have information compartmentalized, it can also be not helpful in some cases, because it makes something which is very complex almost too simple. There's pros and cons either way, I guess. But in today's episode, I wanted to talk about what to do if you're high functioning but not thriving. I work with a lot of different types of clients. I've got a client at the moment who's just been celebrating getting out of bed and walking down 4 stairs and back up 4 stairs and back to bed again. And we've been working together now for like 4 or 5 months. So that is, you know, the extent of like one side of the spectrum. And then I've got other clients who are in full-time work. So they are high functioning, but they're just only working and there's just nothing left at the end of the day to enjoy their life. And they're maybe also living with, well, just existing with, you know, chronic symptoms, even though they're carrying out their day-to-day work lives. And while I was thinking about this episode and jotting down some notes in preparation for recording this episode, I was thinking that like this was me before I became really unwell. And this is probably a lot of people before they became really unwell. And as I was preparing to record today, I thought if I could go back in time now, I was just thinking about the moments when I started to really feel unwell. What would I do differently? And of course, it's such a difficult question to answer, because I can see, looking back and reflecting on how things were, I couldn't stop myself. Like, even with the best intentions, like I knew something was wrong. I knew I didn't feel good. I was quite health aware. I was trying to solve things, but I couldn't see the bigger picture. And I think that's the whole thing, is like, we don't know what we don't know. We can be unconsciously incompetent. And at that stage, I was unconsciously, incompetently trying to look after myself. But really, it took a complete health crisis and for everything to come crashing down before I could really learn the lessons that I needed to learn. So in some ways, it was almost impossible for things to happen any differently to the exact way that they happened, because they happened the way that they happened, because that was the way that things unfolded due to the way that my system was wired at the time. So I have a lot of compassion for that younger version of myself. And I have a lot of grace, I guess. I just think, you know, there's no hard feelings now about what happened. There's no regrets. I don't feel ashamed or regretful of how I navigated the situation, because I know in my heart that I was only doing the very best that I could with the tools that I had at the time. And it did take things to really take a turn for the worst. And obviously the worst is relative, but it took things taking a turn for my worst so that I could learn what I really needed to learn to come out the other side of this. And I'm sure I've said many times before on the podcast that this is also, it's been a gift, quite a gift in not the best packaging, perhaps, but a gift to learn the things that I've been able to learn and be able to help people in a way that I would never have been able to help them had I not lived through this experience myself. And that's not to say that I'm perfect either. There's probably more learning and growing that I need to do as well to help people in an even more impactful way. But we're all on our own individual journeys. But if I could go back in time and do things differently, I think the biggest things that would have probably made the greatest difference at the time would probably have been the basic stabilizing factors that I talk about all the time on this podcast. And I even want to say, like, top of the list, as I've written it out here, is pacing. And because my life was not paced, I would literally be at my desk, jumping from one task to the other, one call to the other, go, 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 you know, for 14 hours straight in a day. And, you know, maybe a lunch break here and there. And not every day was like that. Being honest, there were days when I did have a better pace, but there were also just some really intense times. And there was just too much intensity. There was just too much intensity, not enough rhythm, not enough flow, just pushing, pushing, pushing all the time, being unrealistic about what could really be achieved in a day, in a week, in a month, in a year, and constantly striving and pushing forward, putting unrealistic expectations on myself, which then had a trickle-down effect and that influenced the way that I paced my day, the boundaries that I set, and everything else in between. And if I could go back to that younger version of myself, I would just tell her to slow down. And I would just tell her that she was okay and that things would be all right and that she was safe and that it was safe enough to slow down. And I appreciate that she probably wouldn't have listened. So those words of wisdom would probably have been lost. And just also holding space for the fact that when you have been going a million miles an hour and that's just your norm, that it can be really hard to slow down because A, it feels completely foreign and unfamiliar. And then that can feel really, really unsafe. So slowing down needs to happen slowly. And I think if I could have had more pacing to my days, more nurturing, more self-care, more space, that would have probably made a really big difference for me. And I appreciate that the reason why I didn't give myself that was because it didn't feel safe to. So that's a really nice transition into the next thing, which is the nervous system. And this is like an internal battle that I have a lot when I'm working with clients, because many people will say, oh, I do journaling, or I do breath work, I use Insight Timer, I do meditation, I do yoga nidra, and all those things are great. They really, really are great. And I'm very biased, but when I say this, I just think somatic work is next level. And I can see that someone is really taking the steps to support themselves in the best way that they know how. But until you've really experienced what somatic work can do for you, it's very difficult to understand how it's different to some of these other modalities that we can use to support the nervous system. And yet at the same time, I also hold space for each nervous system finds its own way. And I always want to support and be supportive of the things that people find helpful and encourage people to do more of the things that work and they find helpful. But sometimes when I'm working with clients and they may be doing functional medicine with me and I'm seeing all these things that they could do, we could do somatic sessions with, and it would just, I can really like feel, oh, we just need to do a somatic session on that. Or we could work through this in a somatic session. But they don't know, they can't see from my perspective how beneficial that would be. It can be a really challenging place to be. And so this was me when I was high functioning. I was even high functioning in my nervous system support. I was, you know, doing yoga, even went to go and do a yoga teacher training. I was practicing meditation. I was journaling. I was reading mindset books. I was doing all of the things that people do to support themselves. But it was just not working in the way that I wanted it to work for me. And it was only when I found somatic experiencing, I finally really got what I needed. And it wasn't a quick fix. And I think that frustrates people sometimes. They want something that's going to work quickly. And I understand the need for that because often we're in so much emotional pain surrounding our current state of health that we just need some relief. Somatic experiencing, especially if you've got a syndromal system, it needs to be slow because it needs to work at the system's capacity for change. So if I could go back and, you know, change things for my younger self, I would have just paid for her to have the therapist that I have now and to learn somatic experiencing. But I also do believe in divine timing and that things come when the system is ready. And maybe it came for me at just the right time. I'll never know for sure. So I would say, you know, doing some proper pacing would have been so beneficial to me at that point in time. And then building that deep connection and relationship with my body through regular somatic therapy and somatic practices would have just made such a difference to the trajectory of my health. Things might not ever have had to get as bad as what they did if I had those tools in my toolbox. Then the other thing is obviously boundaries with self and boundaries with others. And this was really important for me when I was, before I became properly unwell, but when I was circling the drain, as I like to say, I didn't have good boundaries with myself and with other people. And when you're running a business and working with lots of clients who in a service-based industry as a helping professional, people are going to need you all the time. And of course, your job is to be there for people, but if you're there for people in a way that also doesn't protect yourself and protect your own energy, that is a recipe for burnout. But this is kind of now speaking to maybe some of the clients that I work with who are high functioning but not thriving. This shows up in many different ways in our lives. Even with some of the clients that I'm working with who you know, go into the office and they are able to work, there can be a lot of pressure with office culture about taking lunch breaks, about taking rest breaks. And if we're trying to implement pacing strategies, it can be really hard to say, oh, I'm just going to go take 15 minutes because everybody else is working. And then that could potentially be perceived as you lounging around and not being focused on your job. But that 15 minutes that you take to go somewhere quiet, settle your nervous system, regulate yourself could actually potentially increase your productivity in the long term because you're going to feel better for it. And it is probably the pacing that people who are higher functioning find really challenging because they can push through. They have the ability to push through. Sometimes when we are less well, like if you're more sort of like housebound or bedbound, there's no way you can push through because you will pay for it and you will pay for it big time. But often people who are high functioning but not thriving can continue to function. They just don't feel great, but they're not moving towards thriving. They're just staying in this place of not feeling great, but continuing to function and or potentially getting worse over time, which is what happened to me. And this is actually a conversation I was having with a client this morning. Is sometimes implementing the pacing strategies can be the hardest thing to do because your handbrake isn't as strong as somebody who is bedbound or housebound. So you need a lot more self-discipline to do it. And we have to overcome some of those barriers, such as like social and cultural influences. What will people think? How will I be perceived by my friend or my boss or whatever, if I need to go and take a break, if I need to settle my nervous system, if you're not embedded in a culture which is encouraging and supportive of self-care, that takes a little bit more energy to push back and create those boundaries. And also if we've been in the same working environment or engaging with the same people for a long time, they know already how we show up. And then if we change how we show up, that's potentially not always going to be convenient for them, or it's going to change how they have to show up. It's like a dance. One person changes the rhythm or the moves, the other person has to accommodate it. And so this takes energy to change the dance within office culture or home life balance or with friends or whatever it might be. And when you're already struggling with your health, sometimes you don't always have that energy to push back and create the new dance or create the new culture. But it needs to be done, because whatever you're doing, your job, your home life, your social life, it has to be sustainable. It can't be boom and bust, because boom and bust will just create deterioration over time. And this is really hard, because we have to look at ourselves and we have to look at where some of these beliefs or behaviors are coming from. And they are often coming from very, very deep rooted patterns that we created in childhood. And you might want to listen to one of the episodes that I recorded on this. Let me just get the name very quickly for you. So episode 99 on energetically expensive personality traits. Some of these personality traits which we have are influencing our ability to take care of ourselves, essentially. And they are coming from patterns or behaviors that we have been that have been generated probably from a young age, and that we have been rehearsing and repeating and wiring into our nervous system for decades in some cases. And so to suddenly change can be really challenging and probably not really realistic. But if we can work on our nervous system and do some self-reflection and maybe get some external support, we can begin to change from the inside out. And that will make putting some of these more lifestyle-based practices in place run a bit more smoothly, so that we can really nurture ourselves towards health, being healthy and thriving, instead of just running ourselves into the ground. And as I said already, but I just want to highlight one more time, because it's something that comes up a lot with clients, is when you are high functioning and you can push through, it's really difficult to do, because you can handle the payoff or the payback, shall we say. You can handle the payback, you can handle the malaise, you can handle the headaches or whatever is going on for you, but it's not a sustainable way and it's not the path to how you want to feel. So those would probably be some of the most important things to focus on in the beginning: pacing, nervous system, boundaries. And then I would also say here as well, just because it kind of links with some of the more lifestyle stuff, is sleep. I was always like a really great sleeper. Even as a child, I think my mom must have just loved me, because I never had that bedtime argument. Like, you should go to bed now. No, I don't want to. I would just go, I'm tired now, I'm going to bed, good night. And I would just take myself off to bed. So I've always been somebody who likes going to bed. I'm generally a good sleeper. My sleep did start to change when I became properly unwell, but and more so from an early waking perspective versus a going to sleep perspective. I've always been able to get to sleep relatively easily, unless I'm under a lot of stress. But that's not the case for everyone. Some people struggle again with the discipline to create a proper wind down routine in the evening, or to go to bed on time, to reduce the level of stimulation that they have. And again, if you're high functioning and you're flying all over the place the whole day, it can sometimes feel like there's just more to do, or you really struggle to unwind in the evening. And this is where the pacing comes in, is because if we have good pacing, if we have nervous system support sprinkled throughout the day, and we have opportunity to just process and just charge some of the survival energy from the day as it's happening, we're less wound up in the evening. And that can help us to feel safer to actually slow down and get ready to go to sleep. Or in some cases, we might need actually to just work through like some sleep issues, whether that's through supplementation to support sleep or like some fear or anxiety around falling asleep, which can come for various reasons that might need to be worked through with a therapist. But for the most part, just those sleep hygiene practices and having a good wind down routine is really, really important if you want to be thriving. We need sleep. It's such an important part of recovery. And whenever I've got a client who's not sleeping, the goal is just to get them to sleep because it just is so important. So those are some of the lifestyle things. And then I would also put in here as well, blood sugar management. Again, people who are busy or high functioning, they might be busy and too busy or apparently too busy to prepare proper meals. They might be having a lot of things they can grab on the go. They might not be putting the attention into their diet that they need to because of the extra work required for like cooking at home or making packed lunches or making sure that they do the shopping on time. So again, just coming back to some of those basics, like if you want to be high functioning and thrive, you have to put great fuel into your body and getting your blood sugar stable, not relying on caffeine or sugar or things like that to keep you going will also potentially be really, really supportive. Then we get a little bit more into some of the more technical things. So again, if I was thinking about myself back in the time I was unwell, like I didn't know, but I probably had mold then. I just didn't know it. I probably had a high toxic load. I just didn't know it. I had gut imbalances, which I was trying to address, but the interventions probably were not that successful because of the mold. And I was trying all sorts of different diets, but I guess I hadn't really found the right one for me. And I was overtraining because I had been like such an active person at one point in time. I didn't think I was overtraining, but I was because I was just pushing my body too hard all the time. But my benchmark for what too hard was very, very skew. So here, even just things like reducing those kind of hidden stresses that are going on, like blood sugar balance could be, imbalances could be a hidden stress. Exercising too intensely all the time could be a hidden stress. Nutrient deficiencies because you have gut issues and you're not absorbing foods properly could be a hidden stress. So thinking about like where are the hidden stresses coming in and then how could we potentially address those? Like, you know, I was just thinking about how like when I stopped weight training and I practiced yoga, I actually handled dynamic yoga fine. And I probably could have continued with some very gentle weightlifting if I had been able to leave my ego at the door and just adjust like what I was doing and not put so much pressure on myself to push so hard all the time. So sometimes we think what we're doing is normal because we have an idea in our head because of what we've done in the past. And we're comparing ourselves to somebody who is 10 years younger, or a 10 years younger self or whoever it is. And I think there's the word that's coming up here is acceptance. Sometimes we just have to accept that we can't do as much, but it's not about throwing the baby out with the bathwater and not doing anything. It's just finding that right dosage of things that we can do. So focusing on what we can do instead of what we can't do and building a really healthy and nourishing lifestyle around that. So looking for those hidden stresses and, you know, sometimes it's hard for us to see these for ourselves. And that's where working with a practitioner like myself or someone similarly trained with similar experiences can be really helpful because they can help us see the things that we can't see. But circling back then to things like detoxification, drainage, gut health, mold, toxic load, I have high functioning clients who are working on all of these things. some of them have mold, some of them have candida, some of them are producing mycotoxins, a lot of them have digestive imbalances. So really getting to the bottom of what's going on here and addressing it sooner rather than later can also prevent someone from decline. And I had thought, like, if only I had known what I knew now in terms of like the mold and the detoxification and the drainage, if only I had known that when I was still more high functioning, it was another thing that could have really made the difference from me being as I was to then like a complete decline. That and the combination of the nervous system, the pacing, all the other stuff that I've already mentioned about here today. So, you know, we often like, and that was the thing is when I was reading Neil Nathan's book about mold, I was like, I'm going to read this for my clients because mold people are really sick people. I'm not really sick like the moldy people are. So this couldn't be a problem for me. But it was a problem for me. And I think it had been probably a problem for me for a really long time. So mold isn't just for everybody who's really, really sick. Like mold impacts people in different ways. But as the whole system gets worn down over time, then it can become a bigger problem, not just because of the mold, but probably because of the number of things in the bucket, which are causing the bucket to overflow. That's definitely how I see my journey from being high functioning and not thriving to then somebody who was very much not thriving and not high functioning, is that it was so many loads in the bucket that weren't appropriately addressed. And then eventually something just, you know, something's got to give. And that was my path. And as I said already, I think perhaps that was the way that things were supposed to happen for me. But if you are high functioning, don't necessarily dismiss that there isn't a digestive issue, or don't necessarily dismiss that you need to support your detoxification and drainage, or don't necessarily dismiss that there could be some sort of chemical overload or mold mycotoxins or candida or colonization. Just because you're not as sick as some of the other people out there doesn't mean these things aren't necessarily a problem for you. Investigating and addressing these things could be really, really supportive and help you move towards thriving. Even for myself, like being a practitioner, understanding all the tests, understanding the value of testing, using testing all the time with my clients, I would always drag my feet to test myself because of the expense. And this is someone who understands the test, who appreciates the value, uses them all the time. And even still, I didn't want to spend the money. And every time I've spent money on testing, I'm sure I've said this on many podcasts before, it's always been so valuable. And every time a client does a test and we get some good information and then we can really like sink our teeth into it and like move things forward, it's so valuable. And I appreciate that the cost of being unwell is massive. I have been there too. And we do need to prioritize expenses. But if you do have the money or you can make it work, it can be really, really helpful to invest in getting more information or investing in working with someone who can help you interpret that information to help you sometimes get out of the hole that you're in. So takeaway is that just because you are high functioning, don't dismiss that there could be like a gut issue, a toxic load, a mold issue, candida, parasites, something like that going on. And then other things for high functioning people who are not thriving to think about would be maybe specialized diets. There are obviously so many different diets you can do: gluten-free, dairy-free, low histamine, low FODMAP, low oxalate, paleo, autoimmune paleo, fasting, keto, paleo, keto, you know, the list goes on and on and on. And it can be really overwhelming to know which diet do you do. And as a practitioner, we usually make these decisions on a case-by-case basis based on the symptoms someone has, maybe some test results we have. And then sometimes it is just a case of trial and error. Do you want to try this diet? See how you feel? Okay, that didn't really make much of a difference for the amount of time and energy you're putting into complying. It's not really worth it. Shall we try this thing instead? And so it's not always clean cut. I would say more times than not, clients will usually get a good outcome from dietary changes, but not all the time. And sometimes we have to be prepared for a little bit of trial and error when it comes to finding out what's going to be best for us. It can be difficult for people who are high functioning to follow strict diets, especially if they're working, they've got kids, they've got elderly parents, they've got all the things going on, and they're trying to juggle and keep all the plates spinning in the air. But it can be done. And sometimes the payoff can really be worth it. But as a starting point, I just think blood sugar management and like cleaning up just whole foods, getting rid of the refined sugars, processed foods, and making sure blood sugar is stable and you're eating enough protein. Those foundations can really make a difference when someone's not doing them. And so that's really where I like to start people generally, unless they are like, they're already in that place and they're already doing a lot of those things and then they're ready for the next thing. And so then the final thing here just to think about is building resilience in other ways through things like hormetic stresses. So hormetic stresses are stresses that, when applied in the right dosage, help the body to build resilience and can have an anti-inflammatory benefit. So things like heat stress, sauna, cold stress, cold plunges or cold water dips, fasting, if appropriate for the individual, and exercise can also be something that builds our resilience and makes us stronger, provided that we are able to tolerate it. And that's really the most important thing, is this tolerance piece. Because somebody who is high functioning, probably got a lot of a sympathetic tone in their nervous system, operating on fight or flight, they are the type of person who would likely take these things to extreme. I know, because I'm one of them. You know, if the sauna is good for you, then you want to go all the time at the highest heat, really pushing for the sweat. And then you're going to go into the cold, in my case, the cold ocean, and like really let yourself get very cold and then shiver and then get out again and do more heat exposure. That, for somebody who's already under a lot of stress because they're high functioning but not thriving, could just be too much. But a really like gentle sauna, just to get a little bit warm and a little bit clammy and not sweating too much and not too uncomfortable, probably is not going to feel like it's not really doing anything for that high functioning individual, but it could just be really, really nourishing. I would rather choose heat over cold for people who are in this category. The heat will help with detoxification and drainage, but also it's a bit more soothing on the system, whereas the cold is probably going to really push the adrenal glands a little bit harder. Fasting, again, would probably be one of those things that, unless there's some metabolic issue going on, or the person is very well fat adapted, I probably wouldn't push fasting too much, because again, it will probably create a little bit more pressure on the adrenal glands. And from an exercise perspective, like if somebody is also exercising, to just really watch out for the intensity, they might benefit from doing things more like a qigong or walking or swimming. More gentle and supportive types of exercise could be better for someone in this category. That being said, I know if I think back on myself, however many years ago, I just would not have been able to give up my weightlifting. And, you know, there was an attachment there, potentially an unhealthy attachment, like what fear, like how will my body change? What will I look like? And that was something that I really had to overcome in order to change how I was exercising. And I remember when I made the decision, I'm just canceling my gym membership so that I just cannot go. That was a decision that I had to make, but it didn't come easily. So these hormetic stresses can be beneficial, but we really have to watch the dosage for anyone with fatigue, but definitely these high functioning people. And then, because I mentioned the adrenal glands, I actually forgot that one on my list, but maybe we just take a moment to say, check your hormones. If you are pushing forward, very sympathetic, dominant throughout the day, we want to check adrenal function. We want to check thyroid function. The amount of stress could also be impacting sex hormones. You may be approaching perimenopause. There may be some hormone dysregulation coming from that. So checking hormones would also be something to consider if you're high functioning but not thriving. Some women take hormone replacement therapy and it makes them feel great. Some women take hormone replacement therapy and it makes no difference, or it works for a while and then they kind of go backwards again. So this is a dance that needs to be done. You need to work out what's best for you. But supporting the thyroid and supporting the adrenal glands can also be really great. With clients, I like adrenal adaptogens for adrenal function, but balancing blood sugar, nervous system, pacing, getting enough sleep, also really, really great for adrenal function, and electrolytes. So a lot of my clients, get them on electrolytes first thing in the morning when their adrenals are working quite hard. And then in terms of thyroid function, that's something that we can test and then support appropriately. Doing a lot of the things I've talked about here already will potentially be supportive for thyroid function, but can also take things like thyroid glandulars or certain nutrients which can support the thyroid as well. So if you are someone who is high functioning but not thriving, hopefully there's been something that I've said here today that's been helpful for you. And I just really wanted to emphasize one more time that it can be really hard when you are where you are and you don't know what you don't know, to see that there's things that you are doing which you could do differently that could really help. And I know, because I've been there, that part of the journey is accepting that you're ready for change. But then saying that, I also have some amazing clients who've like listened to all my podcasts, implemented so many things, they still feel quite stuck. And then they come to me, and that's when it can be really helpful to have an outsider who can see the things that you can't see and help you head in the direction that you want to go. There's always things we can do, and there's always things that we can change. So I hope you have enjoyed listening to this today. If there's even just one little thing that you can take away from it, then I hope it has been beneficial, and I will see you in the next episode.